Hello, assalamu alaikum everybody, hope you're all safe, sound and healthy. And I'm doing this impromptu podcast because it's, you know, it's constantly on my mind and I don't want to forget it. So I want to get it done while it's fresh in my mind. And right now it's actually 1 a.m. and today is Tuesday, the 16th of April. Yes, it has just begun. The 16th of April has just begun. It's 1 a.m. And I hope that the background noise is controlled because I'm literally under the fan and I'm in no mood to turn it off because, as I said, this is 1 a.m. Hello, guys. I'm basically supposed to be trying to sleep right now. And as you know, that is when our minds race. So, where was I? Yep. The impromptu podcast. Why? Because there's this thing that has been, you know, really, really burning a hole in my brain. And that is, as you know, I have in multiple ways talked about our society, our culture, how we don't seem to want to leave our pagan traditions, our pagan cultures, and we try to glorify them and we try to look for justifications and excuses, so much so that we sometimes even give it the name of Islam. And you know, one of those things that I realized is I have never bowed down in front of anybody in my entire life except once, and I think that's why it's burning a hole in my mind. Every time that memory hits me, you know, I get extremely uncomfortable. Why? Because it is shirk. I don't know if people actually know this, but I mean, people think it's fun and games, but I'm not a humorous person, let me just say it out loud. This is at least where these things are concerned, and that is why also I clash with Desi's, you know, because my sense of humor and Desi's sense of humor don't match. To me, what is insulting, offensive, mannerless, unethical, and toxic to the Desi's, this is their brand of humor. So, you know, I'm not a humorous person where that is concerned. And so, you know, there was this auntie, I'll call her auntie just to be a little respectful. But there was this lady who, you know, she was a friend, a family friend for a brief time. And, you know, it was Eid. And this is many years ago. And it was Eid. And, you know, she wanted to give me Eidi. And she was like, you know, oh, there's this really, you know, tradition, there's this fun tradition that we do with kids, you know, just for fun. You have to bow down, you know, in the, you know, the old formal Indian way where you just bow down and say thank you so much in other words and all that. And, you know, that so you have to bow down, you know, and I'll give you the Eidi. And I just stood and stared at her. Why? Because actually I was debating on whether to teach her about how this is shirk in Islam and I don't need her bloody Eidi. And then I was also debating on the other aspect, which is very important in Islam. And that is never to insult somebody or never to show somebody how ignorant they are, never to expose their stupidity, never to humiliate them. And then at the same time, you know, this was all going on in my mind for all those milliseconds. You know, in my mind, it was also like, okay, but you know what? She's humiliating me Islamically as well by asking me to bow down. I don't care if it's a tradition or something. I don't care if it's fun and games for her. For me, this is not fun. For me, this is humiliation because in Islam, it is humiliation. I'm not supposed to bow down in front of anybody. So all these things were racing in my mind. And then I did a very awkward sort of a bow and, you know, but then, you know, since then it really, really, you know, I was like, yeah, what the frack, you know, what's wrong? Because I don't know. I mean, she's like Urdu speaking and I'm sorry to say, but Urdu speaking have these weirdest of traditions and weirdest of Hindu cultures that they bring with them, you know, talking about tradition and culture and all. You're Muslims now. You know, you're Muslims. I don't care what traditions your family had eons ago when you were not Muslims, you know, and I don't care if even after being Muslims, they continued with some of their pagan traditions, you know, due to having lived, obviously, for such a long time as, you know, people of different faiths and then, you know, living together with people of other faiths and, you know, cohabitating and whatever. I don't care. The point is, now you're not living in that condition or situation, and you know, at least now you people should not be that ignorant. So, I mean, you know, when I look at the people, how they're always going on and on about educating each other on Islam and doing their dharses and doing their Quranic studies and all, sometimes it really hits me. Do they even know of these minor things? You know, do they even know the importance of how the Prophet said, do not imitate those who are of different faith than yours. Do not imitate their traditions. He said it in black and white. I don't see why it's so difficult for people to understand that. You are not supposed to imitate other people's culture and traditions, especially when they have a religious intonation and it clashes with your religion and it clashes with your beliefs. Okay? So one of them being, yes, bowing down, you know. And yet, you know, I have seen this culture persist in many countries where people have converted to Islam, and those countries are predominantly Muslim, but they have not left that culture. For example, in West African culture, kids knelt down in front of their parents, you know, or should I put it in another grammatical form, they kneeled down in front of their parents, you know, as a, you know, point of respect. But again, this is shirk. This is shirk, you know. And in India, Pakistan, this whole concept of, you know, husbands being majazi khuda, this is shirk. You're not even allowed to bow down in front of a prophet. Now, you see, you need to understand that. If you're not allowed to even bow down in front of a prophet, who the hell is your husband? And why is he your majazi khuda? It is shirk. This majazi khuda concept was a Hindu concept, and it was transported into many of the Muslims of the subcontinent by Akbar the idiot, you know, King Akbar the Great, who had this idiotic plan of merging the two religions because he thought that it would make things more peaceful. So he merged Islam and Hinduism and he called it Deen-e-Ilahi. And it is from there that a lot of these problems began. And I think his sons were right to go against him on that, and his sons were right to abolish that idiotic Deen-e-Ilahi thing and to set things right once again, because you cannot do such things. Okay, for example, as I said, making kids bow down or kneel in front of you is shirk. You are not their God. You are not their superior in Islam. Even if your relationships are that of mother and child or father and child, you know, parents and children, grandparents and children. But I have never in my entire life seen this tradition of bowing down amongst our people in Pakistan. So it was a bit of a shock when that lady who is a Pakistani, you know, she said that, oh, it's a tradition and it's fun. It's not fun because, first of all, again, it is shirk. You're making me bow down in front of you for fun? You crazy lady? You know, but as I said, you know, Urdu-speaking people, you know, they've brought a lot of weird stuff in the mix. But we Punjabis, for example, or if you go to a Balochi or you know, if you go to a Pathan or, you know, any other, like if you go to Kashmir and all, I don't think anybody's ever going to be able to relate to that. In fact, I think even in Karachi, you will find a lot of other people from, you know, from different communities who will not relate to that. God knows what kind of a family she had, seriously. But, you know, it really irked me. It really irked me. And it keeps on irking me every time I have the misfortune of remembering it. You know, because as I said, to me, this is not fun. To me, this is not a joke. To me, this is not something that people should just so easily succumb to. And I'm still, you know, every time this memory hits me, I'm still always in this debating condition mentally, where I'm constantly debating with myself that did I do right or did I do wrong? You know, should I have just, you know, smacked her on her ignorance, smacked her verbally, that is. Should I have just, you know, given her, you know, a piece of my mind? Should I have just coldly told her that, no, you know, it's against my religion. It's against your religion too, woman. You need to go read the Quran properly. But I mean, you know, but the thing is that we have always been brought up to be very polite and it has caused me a lot of pain. The fact that I've been brought up to be very polite has caused me a lot of suffering, because I've never had to say, I've really never said a lot of things to people that I really wish I could have said. I never gave a piece of my mind to people, which is why people never knew their boundaries. And you know, as you know, my pet peeve about Desis is they have no boundaries. And I'm glad to see that I'm not the only one. It's actually official, thanks to Harvard. It is official that Pakistanis have no boundaries. Yes. Learn to have boundaries. Because in Islam, boundaries are everything. Islam is all about boundaries. Islam came to break traditions. Why are you bringing traditions in? Number one, you are mocked in the Quran. In the Quran, you human beings are mocked in the very first chapter. Or should I say the second chapter. I don't know why I never consider Surah Al-Fatiha the first chapter, although it is technically the first chapter. So in the second chapter, in the very first lines of the second chapter of the Quran, God mocks the people by saying that you blindly follow your forefathers. And when you're asked why, you say, oh, it's our culture, it's our tradition. So what the hell are you people doing, seriously? What culture and tradition are you trying to give so much importance to that you would rather go against God and the divine law of equality, you know, just to keep your traditions alive? I mean, what is so important about those stupid ass traditions of yours where, you know, it's fun to tell people to bow down and take Eid from you, and because it's fun. It's not fun, sorry. As I said, my idea of fun is nothing like the Desi's idea of fun. You know, even the Desi's idea of a sense of humor is getting personal with somebody. When they get really personal with somebody, they think that it's a joke. It's not a joke. Even in Islam, it's not a joke. Thank you very much. In Islam also, the Prophet has time and again reminded people that there is a difference between teasing and taunting, and it's a fine line. Learn to differentiate between the two. You know, there's a difference between joking and personally attacking somebody. And he made it very clear that a joke is something in which everybody shares a laugh. Anything in which any one person does not find it funny is not a joke. That's a personal insult. So again, I ask you, Desis, what the frack are you people doing? Seriously, you know, how is it that you people do not even know what constitutes shirk? Okay, when it's written in black and white, I mean, there's no debate there. There's really no debate there. You talk about your dharses and your, you know, and your Quranic classes and your hadith classes, and you don't even know the basics. Yeah, I mean, seriously, here's a basic for you, which is something I have repeatedly, time and again, repeatedly posted on social media, as well as reminded the people around me, you know, that following any monk or priest is shirk. This is a hadith of the Prophet where he said, I fear that the people of my ummah will end up being like the Christians and the Jews, where they will follow their priests and monks and commit shirk. And the Sahaba was so, his companion in front of whom he said these words, the companion was so surprised, you know, and shocked. And he's like, no, they're not worshipping them. They're not following them. They're just asking for guidance. Then the Prophet said, tell me one thing. If they ask a monk about something and he says that this is accepted, but in divine law it is not accepted, they will still follow the monk? The companion said, yes. He said, okay, and if something is accepted in the divine law, but the monk just said it's not accepted, they will still follow the monk? He said, yes. He said, well, that is called worshipping and that is called shirk, because they did not bother to listen to God himself, but they're asking a man just like them, to tell them what the divine law is, and they accept whatever he says as the word of God. And that is shirk. And this is why, I will repeat again, this is why in Islam there is no concept of priesthood. There is no concept of priesthood. In Islam, there is only a muazzin whose job it is to give the azan, to call people for prayers, to lead them in their prayers, to do the khutbah, and that's it. He cannot tell them what to do and what not to do, and he cannot create his own fatwas and issue them as the word of God. And people should not listen. People need to first. That is why in Islam, education is an obligation. It's not a luxury. It's not a choice. It's an obligation. Why? Because you've got the Quran. You've got the Hadith. You've got your precedents. They're all set up for you. You've got four sources. Your two main sources are in black and white, the Quran and the Hadith. Read them. Study them. Understand them. If you still have a problem, yes, go through more research. There's so many scholars who've done research. Check out their research, but remember again not to blindly follow anyone's scholar. Keep your mind open and refer back to the Quran again and again. Because the Quran, like any other book, the more you read it, the more you get out of it. And everybody has his or her own interpretation of any book that they read based on their socioeconomic background, based on their ethnic background. The Quran is no different. Everybody comes up with their own interpretations, and that is why we don't blindly listen to people's interpretations of religion, especially when it has already been cleared and clarified and verified by the Prophet himself in great detail. Yes, you're free to, obviously, you're free to study it, you're free to do research, you're free to ask scholars, yes, but again, do not blindly follow anyone saying that, oh, he is 100% right, because nobody can be 100% right. You need to use your brains as well, thank you very much, you know, we've got cells, those two cells that rub together, yeah, our brain cells, the little gray cells, use them. So, listening to people blindly, following people blindly, following religious leaders, following priests and monks, this is shirk. There is no question there, there is no debate. It's in black and white. Number two, as I said, bowing down in front of somebody, kneeling down in front of somebody, lowering yourself in front of somebody as if that person is superior to you, that is shirk. Because there is only one person we bow down in front of during prayers, and that is God. Remember, there is only one being that we kneel in front of. There is only one being that we prostrate in front of. That is God. So in the West African countries, where even in the Muslim households, that tradition, I don't know if they finally stopped it or not, but when I lived there in the 80s, the tradition was still very, very, you know, it was there. It was a part of their life, where they would even prostrate in front of their parents. I know that in Buddhism, they prostrate in front of their parents. And I know that in Hinduism also, they bow down, kneel down, prostrate in front of the parents, touch their feet, this, that. All of this is shirk in Islam, because nobody is superior to you. Nobody. You should never bow down. You should never lower yourself in front of anybody, not even your parents. You can't even do that in front of a prophet. Again, I'll remind you. Which would have actually made sense if you were allowed to do it in front of a prophet. But because God had said all human beings are equal and no one is superior to the other, regardless of their title, regardless of their relationships, and regardless of their position in life. And this is also why, you know, the concept of royalty sort of gets to me, because the concept of royalty clashes heavily with this concept in Islam that nobody is superior to another. And as we know, all the caliphs were elected. They were not They didn't just come on their own. All the caliphs in the history of the Islamic Empire, they were elected. They were elected by what you could refer to as councilmen. It's very, in fact, the American presidential system is heavily influenced, inspired by the Muslim caliphate system. You know, it's the same system as the Islamic system, where you have people who vote for you, except the only change here, actually, you could say, is that where in Islam, the people who vote for the caliphs are people who are, again, you know, brought in by the people in their alleged positions, in their seats, and then they in turn vote for the ultimate leader, the caliph, the president, okay? And whereas in America, obviously, it's the people who vote directly for the president, and he doesn't need his, you know, senators and, you know, council members to exclusively vote for him in order for him to be the president. It's mainly the people's votes. Similarly, in Pakistan also, the prime minister, even though the prime minister gains votes from the people, but technically, again, he is elected by the parliament, right? So there is that. So, I mean, I'm just trying to explain it in as easy a way as I can. I hope I didn't confuse anybody even more. But what I'm just trying to say is that even in Islam, there was always the concept of elections. Even if it was just the people who represented the people, as in, you know, like how you would have parliamentarians or senators. So you would have people's representatives who were already in the position, in government position, and then they in turn would elect for the caliph. The point being that there is a process. There is a process of election. There is a process of voting, right? So royalty goes against this whole idea, the whole foundation of Islam, where everybody is supposed to be equal. Because originally, royalty meant that there's a self-appointed leader who is akin to God, or who is a direct, in some religions, a direct descendant of God, you know, and in any case, related to God or not, he's supposed to be the be-all, end-all where the land is concerned. So they own the land, they own the people, everybody's like, you know, they're subordinate. That goes against Islam. Nobody owns the land but God. Nobody owns the people but God. So you see, the original idea behind royalty is shirk, again. So that is why I've always been a bit, you know, dubious when it comes to royalty and royal families and all. I know, as I've said it, I've mentioned in one of my just recent podcasts that I know that there are many Muslim countries where the royalty is just basically royalty in name, but I mean, they have a whole, you know, a whole constitution going on beneath them. They have a sort of a, like England, a sort of a democratic you know, there is democracy, despite the fact that there is royalty. So yeah, I get that. Like in Thailand, similar to Thailand, although Thailand is not a Muslim country, but yeah, I mean, many Muslim countries are probably similar to Thailand, except for the Middle Eastern countries, which I think are 100% royalty. I don't think I know. I mean, we all know they're 100% royalty. So there's no democratic movement anywhere near them or beneath them. They're not honorary royalty. They are actual royalty that own the land and own the people in a way. Similarly, dictatorship, you know, it clashes with the idea of Islam again, because nobody can dictate to anybody how to do whatever it is that they want to do. In Islam, you cannot even force somebody to believe in God, which is the whole, you know, I mean, in Islam, after all, the most important thing in Islam is believing in God. And yet you are not even allowed to force somebody to believe in God. So what more do you want? Seriously. So yeah, this thing really, really has got to me enough that after all these years, I'm still, you know, so I think it's very important. It's very, very important for people to realize the dangers of, you know, thinking that it's fun to include culture. If that particular culture or tradition clashes with religion. And as you know, it's one of my most, it's something that I hate the most about our people, is how they always bring culture in when it suits them. I've talked about it time and again. They bring their culture into everything as long as it suits them. And they interchange it with religion, and they even dismiss religion because it doesn't suit them. For example, the culture of joint family, which Islam does not encourage. Islam heavily discourages. In fact, in Islam, there is no concept of joint family system. And there's a good reason for that. But you will have people argue about joint family system and make excuses and justifications. Oh, why? Because suddenly this aspect of Islam doesn't suit you, where every household should be independent. Because, oh, financially, it's more suitable for you people to all live under one roof and then have strife amongst yourselves and have politics, and, you know, you will end up breaking up as a family anyway because you're so sick and tired of, you know, tripping on each other's toes for years, you know. And there's always one person seems to bear the heaviest of burdens of five families joined to the hip, you know. I mean, it's all wrong in Islam. It doesn't, you know, in Islam, a woman is supposed to have her own kitchen. She's supposed to have her own house. She's supposed to have her own private dwelling, you know. And here we are just putting everybody under one roof, that it's our culture. And then we sit and talk about the merits of joint family system. So suddenly we're smarter than God and we're better than God. Well, again, you see, it's up to you. Then don't bring Islam, you know, into the mix. You're either you follow Islam properly and completely, or you don't. But don't be hypocrites and take parts of Islam that suit you and then take parts of your culture and that suit you. And that is actually one of the worst parts of post-colonial Muslim states, Muslim countries, is that they have taken a heavy part of their colonial times, colonial laws and colonialism, and they've stamped Islam on it. Whereas those countries that colonized them, those countries are right now living based on 100% entirely the Islamic system, which they took from us. And instead they forced their colonial system onto us. And that is why they progressed and we regressed. And we all know it. That's the hilarious part. We all know it. They know it. We know it. And yet we're not willing to change it. We're very comfortable with it. Because Islam is about accountability. It's about law and order. It's about equality. It's about women's rights. It's about children. It's about adults, elderlies. It's about, you know, minorities. It's about everything that would make a chauvinist and, you know, basically a man uncomfortable. So why would they want to, you know, why would they want Islam to regale them back to their status of nothingness when they can pretend that they're, you know, living in the name of Islam while bringing their pagan cultures and their colonial cultures, you know, and just feeding on their ego. So yeah, there's something very, very wrong with, and that's why our country has imploded, by the way. It's imploded for this reason, which is, again, you know, it doesn't matter, no matter how many times I keep on saying this, because our people won't change. People are right nowadays always trying to tell me, no, people are really changing now. Oh, no. Yeah, right. People have still not changed. Yes, the new generation is more aggressive, but the new generation is has its own problems as well. And the new generation is even more confused in so many other things because, to be honest, we've given them jack shit. So we need to think about these things. We really do. And we, again, I would say change comes from within. You cannot change your country's faith if you do not change yourself. And you cannot change yourself just by acknowledging that, oh yeah, we know we have these problems. No. You need to be brave enough to literally uproot these problems from within you and make a permanent change within yourselves. Well, just food for thought. And this is me signing out for the office.